Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today we have the latest information on those devastating damages from last Monday's storm and flooding across our region, including, sadly, three deaths in East County. Hear from residents who lost everything when the storm flooded their homes, and learn why the People's Association of Justice Advocates has announced plans to sue the City of San Diego on behalf of flood victims living along the 100-year floodplain. San Diego Foundation has set up a fund where you can donate to help local flood victims. From California News Service, during Poverty Awareness Month, hear about efforts to combat rising poverty rates in our state. A hearing date has been set for the proposed release of a sexually violent predator in Camp Bowen. We'll have details. Lemon Grove has a grant to revitalize its downtown, and they're looking for people to serve on a committee for this ambitious project. The racial gap in California colleges is widening, and we'll have a report from California News Service. CHP is seeking public help to identify drivers who fled the scene of a fatal pedestrian crash in Spring Valley. The County of San Diego has a new Housemates for Seniors program, and we'll have details. A Ukrainian church in Spring Valley that serves many refugees and gathers humanitarian supplies for war-torn Ukraine has suffered over $300,000 in damages from floodwaters. The House of Ukraine has set up a fund for the community to donate to help. Sextortion threats against teenagers are on the rise, the FBI warns. And county animal shelters are seeking adoptive and foster homes for pets in need. On Sounds of History, learn about Black history in Julian. We'll also have some flood cleanup tips for you today, plus a rundown of new laws in 2024. Hear about California College Corps volunteers making a positive difference, and about a dramatic horse rescue done by a quick-thinking postmaster in Pine Valley. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
As a result of the damage caused by the severe storm on January 22nd, county supervisors have declared a state emergency in anticipation that disaster aid from the state and federal government may be needed. The City of San Diego also proclaimed an emergency, and Governor Gavin Newsom declared a state emergency in San Diego County. The National Weather Service reported Monday's deluge as the fourth wettest day in San Diego since 1850. Many communities received more than 3 to 4 inches of rain or more. The storm caused major flooding in many areas, and not just areas commonly prone to flooding, such as Mission Valley and coastal communities. La Mesa, Lemon Grove, Spring Valley, El Cajon, and Santee are among the East County communities that experienced serious flooding to roads, homes, businesses, and vehicles, some left submerged by rapidly flowing floodwaters. Rescue workers conducted dozens of rescues, including motorists trapped in vehicles and homeless individuals whose campsites along the San Diego and Sweetwater Rivers became submerged. Several hundred homes were damaged in the San Miguel Fire Protection District alone. San Miguel covers Spring Valley, Mount Helix, Rancho San Diego, and unincorporated La Mesa and El Cajon. Many more homes have suffered damage, with the devastation still being assessed. County crews are out in the field assessing the severity of the destruction to homes, businesses, and other infrastructure. The county is asking for the public's help in reporting the damage through a voluntary online survey, which you can find at sandiegocounty.gov, and click the Storm Recovery tab at the bottom. Completing the form does not guarantee that you will be eligible to receive any disaster relief assistance. Filling out the survey is not a substitution for filing a claim with your insurance. You should check with your own insurance first to check for coverage. Before attempting to clean up after the storm, visit the recovery page at alertsandiego.org for tips on documenting damage. This will help as you submit costs and claims to your insurance company. District Attorney Summer Steffen is warning businesses and scammers not to take advantage of consumers post-disaster by price gouging or other fraud schemes. During a declared state of emergency, it is illegal for a business to increase its prices for essential goods and services by more than 10% unless they can show their own costs have been increased. Violations of the price gouging statute are subject to criminal prosecution and can result in 1 year imprisonment in county jail and or a fine up to $10,000. Violations are also subject to civil enforcement actions, including civil penalties of up to $2,500 per violation, as well as injunctive relief and victim restitution. The price gouging prohibition applies to necessities including food and drink, feed for pets and livestock, emergency supplies such as water, flashlights, radios, batteries, candles, blankets, soaps, diapers, toiletries, and building materials, as well as medical supplies such as prescription and non-prescription medications, bandages, and antibacterial products. It is also a misdemeanor for a hotel or motel to increase regular rates by more than 10% during a declared emergency and for the 30 days following the state of emergency. Consumers should be extremely cautious if approached by aggressive agents, adjusters, or contractors after a disaster. Most businesses are honest and have good intentions, but there are always bad actors waiting to take advantage of disaster victims. Working as an unlicensed contractor during a state of emergency is a felony. Keep these tips in mind when selecting a contractor. Ask for proof of licensing, such as a pocket license and a second photo ID. Always verify that the license number matches the contractor you are dealing with. Be aware of scare tactics, odd calls, or unsolicited contacts. Make sure the contractor carries workers' compensation and liability insurance. In the aftermath of natural disasters, debris clearing scams often surface. Do not provide payment up front and be sure to ask where the debris is being taken. Scammers often ask for money up front and then disappear. Sometimes they dump debris on a neighbor's property or park, which may cause you to be responsible for the costs and penalties. The public is also warned to be cautious when dealing with persons soliciting for purported victim relief charities. Many legitimate organizations seek contributions during or after an emergency, but scammers often use phony charitable pleas in times like these. Potential contributors should insist on seeing proper credentials before offering to help. You can file a price gouging complaint with the San Diego City Attorney. For insurance questions, check with the California Department of Insurance. Before hiring a contractor, check their background with the California Contractors Licensing Board, where you can also file a complaint against a contractor. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Three people have died as a result of the flooding in East County. During the storm on Monday, January 22nd, several people were reported in distress at Prospect Avenue and Cuyamaca Street in El Cajon. The Sheriff's Department assisted El Cajon Police and Heartland Fire in responding. Unfortunately, Monday afternoon, a deceased woman was found downstream in Santee. Wednesday morning, the body of a man was found in the same area, apparently swept away by swiftly flowing storm waters. They are believed to be homeless, although the county medical examiner has not yet released their names or confirmed the causes of their deaths. In Lemon Grove, 67-year-old Thomas Hooker died after his SUV crashed into concrete debris scattered by the storm on Lemon Grove Avenue, then struck a utility pole. Despite life-saving efforts, he was pronounced dead at the scene. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The storm that devastated our region on January 22nd flooded homes across San Diego County in many communities, none harder hit than those along the 100-year floodplain in some of East San Diego's inner-city poorest neighborhoods. One day after the storm, Shane Harris, president of the People's Association of Justice Advocates, held a press conference in Mountain View to announce efforts to file a class action lawsuit against the city of San Diego on behalf of impacted residents.
These apartments that I toured this morning are just one example of what we are seeing across our city's most vulnerable neighborhoods. Let me be very clear, vulnerable neighborhoods, stricken by poverty, perplexed by injustice, challenged by a city leadership that continues to neglect these communities already as it is. We're here in what was designated long ago as a 100-year floodplain. A 100-year floodplain. Some of the city's most impoverished and vulnerable neighborhoods, such as Encanto, Ocean View, South Crest, Mountain View, to name a few, are at the brunt of this 100-year floodplain. Historically, portions of Encanto, along with the Emerald Hills, Encanto, and South Branches of Choyas Creek, as well as along Paleta and Paradise Valley Creeks, are located within the FEMA-designated 100-year and 500-year floodplains. The flood zones include undeveloped land, along the creeks, as well as the parks, schools, residential, commercial, and industrial areas. In these areas, the city was supposed to ensure that structures are safe and reasonably safe from flooding. Structures like the church that we are standing next to here, New Way International. I talked with Pastor Steve Cooper, who is busy right now trying to clean up his church. I was here last night with him, helping him to shovel his church. He had not heard from any elected leaders, not from a council person, not from the mayor, not from anyone. His church is completely underwater, completely. And the city is supposed to be protecting these kinds of structures by providing that, ensuring the habitable floors are elevated above the base flood level, among other measures. Overflow of the city's stormwater drainage system, which I'll talk about in a minute, are a result of this as well. And it's an additional source of flooding. I'm arguing today that the city has failed to conduct routine channel maintenance, especially in the most vulnerable neighborhoods of Mountain View, Encanto, South Crest, and other neighborhoods along the 100-year floodplain. The city has failed to address this problem. This is not the problem of the people to fix. This is not the problem of these residents who are innocent standing behind me. It's not their problem to fix. This is the city's problem that they failed the people of our city. This storm's damage to these people's homes, especially in our already most vulnerable neighborhoods, is, make no mistake about it, a direct result of years and years of incompetence by the city to fix our city's stormwater drainage system. But even more so, the city's lack of focus on constantly clearing the flood channels within the 100-year floodplain where residents are most vulnerable to a major storm like this. That is why today I am making a call to action. First and foremost, I'm announcing that at 12 noon today, on the PAJMovement.org website, our civil rights organization will begin to take residents who want to file and who want to be a part of a potential class action lawsuit against the city of San Diego.
Shelltown resident Ashley Manzano spoke of the terrifying ordeal experienced by herself and many of her neighbors.
I live down the street of 38th Street, right there in Shelltown, under St. Jude's. I was literally on top of my roof. All my neighbors were on the roof. I'm looking at my neighbors struggling, dying. I just want to make a brief statement that the government was not helping us. We have a Navy base a few blocks away, three blocks away, and 911 saying helicopters are not allowed in this weather. This weather's not even drastically, it wasn't even lightning or anything, and they did not save us. It took hours for them. You know, we couldn't escape or leave. The water came real quick. We had no time. And I just want to let everyone know that you guys should always be prepared. And I want all the communities to come together, because it's not just us. It's like, we're in the hood. Like, we never expect this to happen right here. I think everyone needs to come together, because this can happen anywhere.
Robert Lopez spoke of what it was like to come home from work and learn that he had lost everything.
Me coming from work and seeing all my neighbors outside, my community outside, helping each other, working together. I was like, you know, you only see this in movies, you only see this on TV, and then you get home and then no, it's actually happening to you. I went inside my place and everything was gone. And it's just devastating. And the first thing I thought of was the families, the kids, you know. Everything they have is gone. The only thing I can say is that I think management can be a little bit more helpful. There's a lot going on with us, and I try to talk to somebody that's supposed to be in charge, and they really just left me with no answers and just kind of questioned me, and it wasn't helpful. I'm pretty sure we all feel the same way. You know, we're all kind of like, what's next? And what's going to happen? What's going to happen with all of us? What's going to happen with all our things? What's going to happen with us? Some of us don't even have a place to stay tonight. You know, my family don't live here. I don't have no family, you know, that lives in California. All my family is in Florida.
Rachel Clark described residents' fruitless efforts to get the city to clear the storm drains.
We have reached out to the city. Somebody wrote that they had reached out to the city. They did get a reply back that this channel, these storm drains needed to be cleaned up. The city replied back, we've received your inquiry, but our storm drainage guys are not available right now. So they just never got around to it. Last year, this storm drain was cleared out. This season, it never happened. I would also like to add that the residents of this apartment complex were not disclosed that flooding was possible here. The last time this happened was December 6, 2018. This was renovated. We all moved in. It was not disclosed that this could happen here. Renters insurance does not cover flood damage. It doesn't cover water coming in from the outside. Only special flood insurance from the National Flood Insurance Program would. If we would have known that, guess what? We probably would have gotten some if we could.
If you're a resident who lives along the 100-year floodplain and you're interested in learning how to join the class action lawsuit, you can visit pajmovement.org/San Diego Flood. Again, that's pajmovement.org/San Diego Flood. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is a public service announcement from the County of San Diego.
San Diegans who want to help local victims recover from this week's severe storm can now make financial donations to a new flood response fund. The county worked with the San Diego Foundation to set up the online fund. The San Diego Foundation will match donations up to $100,000.
Now, 100% of these donations to the San Diego Flood Response Fund will go to nonprofits that are helping San Diegans and San Diego families impacted by the flood. And you can donate at sdfoundation.org.
January is National Poverty in America Awareness Month, and community action agencies across the state are working to change lives for the 5 million Californians who can't afford the basics. The poverty rate in the Golden State rose from 11.7% in fall 2021 to 13.2% in the first quarter of 2023. David Knight is executive director of the California Community Action Partnership Association.
So what we've seen is a tick back up in poverty as both the cost of living has risen, right, at the same time that a lot of the resources are starting to shrink back to pre-pandemic levels.
Community Action programs use block grants to help people who live at or near the poverty line, which is about $20,000 a year for a single parent and child. Lauren Ramos with the Community Action Partnership of San Luis Obispo, known as CAPSLO, says the lack of affordable housing is especially hard for older people on a fixed income.
We have people that are staying in our shelter program that found themselves in a situation where they had rented a place for 25 years and that place sold and the new owner increased the rent beyond their income level and they found themselves on the street.
Community Action programs in all 58 counties use block grants to fund a range of programs that support low-income families, an effort that began 60 years ago during the Johnson administration's war on poverty. Biz Steinberg is CEO of CAPSLO.
I wouldn't still be doing this if I didn't see change happening every day. Community Action, our little slogan is helping people, changing lives. And that has never stopped. It is the most challenging work, but the most rewarding.
Misty Gaddy Blanco with the Fresno Economic Opportunities Coalition says the agency's Board of Commissioners voted this week for a pilot program that will provide $500 a month to families with children living below the poverty line.
This guaranteed income could potentially help them from becoming homeless. It could pay for groceries or fuel to help them focus on their family.
For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
The Superior Court has ordered the conditional release of Alan Earl James, a sexually violent predator. The California Department of State Hospitals has recommended placing him in Campo at a home on Custer Road. James was convicted of sexual assaults with three minors between 1981 and 1985 and kidnapping a child for sexual molestation. A hearing on his placement is scheduled for February 9th. You can submit comments on his placement to sdsafe@sdsheriff.org up until January 24th. The District Attorney's Office and the Sexual Assault Felony Enforcement, or SAFE, Task Force will submit your comments for the court's consideration. In 1986, James was sentenced to prison for 28 years. Prior to his release, the San Diego County District Attorney's Office filed a petition to have him civilly committed to a state hospital as a sexually violent predator. In 1999. In 2018, the Department of State Hospitals approved his release, and in 2019, the court approved his placement in Hakumba Hot Springs. But the COVID-19 pandemic disrupted those plans, and Alan Earl James has remained at Coalinga State Hospital. The hearing on his proposed placement in Campo will be held at 9 a.m. on February 9th in San Diego Superior Court. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell. Big changes are coming to Lemon Grove. The city has received over $335,000 in grant funds from SANDAG for the city's rezoning and downtown specific plan. It would promote mixed-use development and compact urban design, concentrating on creating vibrant, walkable neighborhoods where people can access essential services and recreational opportunities within close proximity. According to the city, an emphasis on increased housing would in turn attract quality restaurants and retailers desired by the community. Grant funds will help implement some of the plan's goals related to housing production, sustainable mobility, energy conservation, reducing governmental constraints for special needs housing, fair housing, reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and enhancing green spaces to reduce heat island effects. The funds will be used to solicit public input on the plan, create a list of parcels to be rezoned, and an interactive zoning map, enact zoning and general plan ordinance amendments, and adopt the plan and meet requirements of the California Environmental Quality Act. An ad hoc committee will meet monthly on the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. at the Lemon Grove Community Center to provide input and guidance on the plan. City staff is recommending that the City Council call for applications for up to 7 ad hoc members. Applications are available on Lemon Grove's website with an application deadline of February 21st. On March 5th, the City Council will make the appointments after interviewing candidates during the council meeting. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
More and more Californians are going to college, earning an associate degree or higher, but racial gaps persist, according to a new report. Researchers from Georgetown University found that degree attainment went up almost 6% between 2010 and 2020. But the gap between white adults and Latino or black adults getting those degrees widened slightly. Tony Carnevale is director of the Georgetown University Center on Education and the Workforce.
What we have here is a race in which everybody is running faster, but no group is really changing their position in the race.
The increase in degree attainment generally translates to gains of more than $2 trillion in net lifetime earnings. But the lack of parity with white adults' attainment leaves significant potential gains on the table. More than $3 trillion for Latino adults and $438 billion for black adults in the Golden State. Carnevale praises efforts to allow community colleges to offer some four-year degrees for certain majors in high demand. And he'd like to see more counseling services so fewer students fall through the cracks, especially in low-income neighborhoods.
People from less advantaged families begin to lose ground in the early grades as they start out strong with measured test scores that shows that they're very talented, but that gradually erodes.
Carnevale adds there is good news about the next generation. Research shows that many Latino parents who immigrated in the 1990s are now sending their children to college at very high rates. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
California Highway Patrol is asking for public help to locate multiple vehicles that struck a pedestrian on January 21st on Sweetwater Road near Blossom Lane in Spring Valley. The vehicles all fled the scene, and the pedestrian died at the scene. The victim's name has not yet been released. One of the vehicles sought is believed to be a Dodge Ram that may have damage to the front and side, with the driver's side mirror missing. Anyone with information regarding this collision is asked to contact the California Highway Patrol, El Cajon area, at 619-401-2000. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Another storm may hit our region next week, so the county and CAL FIRE are offering free sandbags to residents and businesses in the unincorporated areas to prepare for heavy rain. The January 22nd storm brought historic rainfall to the county, causing flood damage to many homes and businesses. So to be prepared for potential flooding or soil erosion, people in the unincorporated areas can visit fire stations to get and fill sandbags. Be sure to call ahead to check availability, since some stations have only bags and no sand, and others have both sand and bag, and supplies are limited. Residents are also encouraged to visit alertsandiego.org for information on what to do during an emergency, tips on how to prepare for a disaster, and find resources about recovery efforts.
County supervisors have approved a pilot program to create housemate matches between lower-income older adults and local residents with a spare bedroom. The two-year pilot program was created to address growing homelessness among older adults. The 2023 point-in-time count revealed the number of older adults aged 55 and older experiencing homelessness increased by 29% from the previous year. The program will match a minimum of 50 older adults, people 55 years or older, with appropriate households that sign up and offer to rent out a spare bedroom. Participants will also be offered services to help them stay housed. David Estrella, Director of County Housing and Community Development Services, says, "Older adults living on a fixed income are more vulnerable to losing their home. This program is a way to catch a senior before they fall through the cracks in this challenging housing market. Older adults earning no more than 120% of the area median income would be eligible for the program and would pay no more than 30% of their total monthly income towards rent. In some cases, a service exchange could be allowed, but not required, where the older adult provides services such as gardening or cleaning to pay a reduced rent. The home must be in San Diego County and in good standing with utility, taxes, and rent or mortgage payments. Program participants will be matched with households based on goals, preferences, and lifestyles. The program includes screening and assessments. The program will be promoted through outreach in the senior services and homeless community and is expected to launch early this summer." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, your network for social justice, this is John Tidwell.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
St. Mary's Ukrainian Orthodox Church in Spring Valley has been a place of worship for Ukrainians across San Diego since 1960. Since the Russian invasion of Ukraine began in 2022, the small church has welcomed and helped many Ukrainian refugees here and also gathered humanitarian relief supplies to send to war-torn Ukraine. But on Monday, January 22nd, a wall of storm water surged down Campo Road in Spring Valley's Casa de Oro community, inundating the Ukrainian church with 2 to 3 feet of mud and debris. 10 News reports the damage to the church is estimated at $200,000, with another $100,000 in damage or destruction of supplies that were meant to be shipped to Ukraine next week. None of these losses are covered by insurance. The sanctuary, church hall, parking lot, and the parish priest's residence are all drenched. Father Myron Mikhailyuk and his wife were trapped in knee-deep rushing waters for 45 minutes, clinging to a fence before they were rescued, according to the House of Ukraine's website. Volunteers have been working to start removing debris, rocks, and mud, a huge undertaking, but major repairs and new flooring are also needed. Plus, all donated goods for Ukraine must be unpacked, cleaned if possible, or replaced. A site for a new Ukrainian church was recently approved in Santee, but for now, the Spring Valley Parish remains the primary place of worship for Ukrainians in the San Diego region. The river of mud has been especially disheartening for displaced Ukrainian refugees and expats already distressed over the Russian invasion and the fate of loved ones in Ukraine. But Vera Scope, whose family members were founding members of this church, told 10 News, "Ukrainians are resilient. That spirit is truly amazing, and we'll get through it. You can help them get through it and recover by donating to a flood relief fund for the church set up by the House of Ukraine, which you can find on their website at houseofukraine.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
January is Trafficking Awareness Month, and the FBI says financially motivated sextortion, often targeting teen boys, went up 20% from October 2022 to March 2023 compared to the same period the year before. Scammers will pose as an attractive girl on social media or gaming sites, ask the boy to send nude photos or videos, then threaten to post them online if the victim doesn't pay up. FBI Special Agent Curtis Cox says the threats often cause extreme mental anguish.
A fear of being exposed that way causes these kids to panic. Sometimes they attempt to make the payments, which is a big mistake. It doesn't solve the problem. It only exacerbates it. And unfortunately, oftentimes we see this anxiety lead to self-harm or thoughts of suicide.
The FBI says between October 2021 and March 2023, the feds got more than 13,000 reports of online financial sextortion of minors, involving more than 12,600 victims, which led to at least 20 suicides. Cox asks parents to discuss sextortion with their kids and show compassion if their child has fallen prey.
These kids are victims to criminals who know exactly what to say and what to do to get what they want. If your kid does report this to you, don't judge, don't be angry. Look at them as a victim and help them get the help and the resources that they need to get through this.
Victims can report the crime at 1-800-CALL-FBI or online at tips.fbi.gov. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
San Diego County Animal Shelters are looking for adoptive and foster families to address a problem affecting shelters throughout the United States, and that's overcrowding. County shelters have too many pets, especially dogs. A variety of factors led to this overcrowding, including a challenging economy and housing shortages for many families. This has forced some people to make the difficult decision to abandon or relinquish their beloved dogs. The rising cost of food and veterinary care is also a factor for some families. San Diego County Animal Services Director Kelly Campbell says more dogs are coming into the shelter this year than there were last year, and fewer dogs in the shelters are being adopted or reclaimed by owners. We don't want to run out of room, and we need the community's help. Adopting or fostering makes a huge difference for the animals in our care and has great benefits for those fostering or adopting. A scientific study by the American Heart Association in 2019 showed that dog owners live longer and have healthier lives than people without a dog. This is often due to the increase in physical activity from daily walks. Dogs also help people improve mental health by reducing daily stress, according to a 1991 study in the Journal of the Royal Society of Medicine. Now, last year, the County Department of Animal Services shelters took in over 5,700 animals, and more than 5,100 were adopted or returned to their owners. Housing and financial hardship were among the top five reasons why dogs were voluntarily relinquished to the shelters. The top reasons for relinquishment were death of an owner or their ability to care for the animal and too many dogs in the home. If you can adopt a dog or foster one but have been putting it off, please consider this urgent need. All dogs that have been in the shelter for more than 30 days will have adoption fees waived. If adoption is not an option, fostering is always free. Even short breaks of a few days away from the shelter environment significantly improves the health and well-being of pets. All basic care supplies, such as food, leash, and bedding, are included as part of this program. Pet owners are asked to have pets spayed or neutered to avoid pet overpopulation. County Animal Services can assist by providing low-cost referrals. People can also help with dog food donations, which Animal Services pass along to community members who need help. You can check out the pets available for adoption, learn more about fostering an animal, or volunteer at the County Animal Services Department website, formerly called the San Diego Department of Animal Control, at sddac.com or call 619-767-2675. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show, and now it's time for the Sounds of History. Many San Diego County residents have visited Julian, a historic gold rush town in the Cuyamaca Mountains in San Diego's East County. Some may also know that it was founded by former Confederate soldiers after the Civil War. but most are likely unaware of the black settlers, who also played key roles in the town's history. In fact, it was Fred Coleman from Kentucky, a freed slave and rancher who discovered gold in a stream that started Julian's gold rush in 1869. Coleman married a member of the Santa Isabel Indian tribe. He had previously been a miner in Northern California. The Coleman Mining District, in what is today known as Julian, was named for him, and he served as its first recorder. America Newton, a widow and formerly enslaved black woman, and her daughter Clara came to Julian from Kansas and started a laundry business that served war veterans, European immigrants, Native Americans, and newly freed African Americans. She used her work ethic to build a new life of freedom. In 1897, Albert Robinson, another black man, who was likely once a slave, founded the Hotel Robinson along with his wife, Margaret. The Julian Hotel is still in operation today and is a designated historical landmark. According to Smithsonian Magazine, Newton, Robinson, and Coleman confronted severe obstacles, racism, poverty, and lawlessness that pervaded the region, making their accomplishments even more remarkable. While African Americans in the post-Civil War era were often unable to find a job, in Julian, those who started their own businesses fared better. America Newton worked as a housekeeper for a man named James Cole back in Kansas, and he accompanied her and her daughter to California. Cole helped Newton file to own an 80-acre homestead just outside of Julian and built her a cabin next door to his own home. She ran her business from her cabin, carrying buckets of water from a spring nearby and heating irons over a grill in the fireplace, also chopping her own wood and driving a horse and buggy to deliver clean wash. And for those who stopped by her business, she'd also serve up water or a homemade liquor drink along with local gossip. Valerie Ashley, co-founder of the Julian African American Pioneers History Committee, once said, "Everybody knew America, and America knew everything about what was going on in Julian." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
The La Mesa City Council has adopted a new ordinance that requires retailers to have a license to sell tobacco products. The ordinance passed unanimously during the January 9th council meeting on Councilmember Jack Hsu's motion to adopt. With the new law, La Mesa joins fellow East County city El Cajon in enacting a tobacco retail licensing program geared towards reducing youth tobacco use. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, 12.6% of all high school students in 2023 used tobacco products, including over 14% of high school girls and 11% of high school boys. La Mesa's new ordinance has provisions for compliance, including the use of underage decoys to enforce local, county, state, and federal laws prohibiting sale of tobacco to minors. Failure to comply with the new law can result in permanent revocation of the license after 4 infractions over 3 years. A first infraction results in a $1,000 fine. A second offense results in a 60-day suspension of the license, and the third occurrence can result in a year-long suspension. Retailers will also be subject to criminal and civil prosecutions in addition to the licensing provisions, according to the ordinance. The law goes into effect 30 days from the date of adoption, and operationally, it will be enforced 90 days after that. Reporting for East County Magazine from La Mesa, this is John Tidwell.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
If your home or business was flooded during the January 22nd storm, it's important to keep yourself and your family safe when you're cleaning up. Before trying to clean up after the storm, first visit the recovery page at alertsandiego.org for safety tips, info on how to properly document your damages, and other resources. Be sure to take photos or videos of damage before you clean it up. Residents should only enter a flood-damaged building after local authorities have said it's safe to do so. Don't enter if there are floodwaters in or around the building or you smell gas. According to FEMA, you should follow these important tips when cleaning up after a flood. If you have been cleared to return to your home, wear clothing with long sleeves and long pants, work gloves, and heavy or rubber boots if you have them. FEMA also recommends wearing goggles and a mask. Do not wade in flood water, which could have dangerous debris in it. The water could also be contaminated or even electrically charged from a downed or underground power line. Use a flashlight instead of matches, lighters, or any other open flames for lighting, since gas may be trapped inside the building. Do not use electrical equipment if it's wet or if you're standing in water. If it is safe to do so, turn off your electricity to prevent electric shock. Throw away any food or drinks that may have come in contact with flood water. You should only drink clean, safe water. Wash your hands with soap and clean water, or use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer before eating. Dry out your home as soon as possible to prevent mold. If you suspect there is mold present, wear a respirator or an N95 mask when entering the building in addition to other protective gear. People with asthma, other respiratory conditions, or suppressed immune systems should not be around mold. To make a cleaner, mix a cup of household bleach with a gallon of water. Never mix bleach with ammonia. If you do attempt to clean the building yourself, open the doors and windows at least 30 minutes afterwards to air it out before staying for a length of time. Conduct an inventory of damages and contact your insurance company to see if you have coverage. You can also fill out the survey at the County of San Diego website to report your damages, since the county is tallying up damages in hopes of getting federal FEMA funds to assist victims of the catastrophic flooding. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
CalMatters has put together a report on new California laws taking effect in the new year. A new law now in effect bans Californians from carrying firearms in various public places, such as parks, stadiums, and places of worship. A federal judge has blocked the new law, but last week, a federal appeals court panel put a hold on that ruling while the case makes its way through the court. Two new laws strengthen consumer protection. One establishes a state restitution fund for consumers who fall victim to false advertising. Another requires insurance companies to negotiate and settle payments with ambulance companies for out-of-network charges. It also limits ambulance bills for uninsured people to the Medi-Cal or Medicare rate. Other new laws affect workers and employers. Workers are now entitled to 5 days of paid sick leave per year, up from 3 days a year previously. Employers cannot ask job applicants about past use of cannabis or fire or penalize workers who test positive for marijuana in hair or urine tests. There are exceptions for jobs requiring federal background checks and for construction workers. As for housing, new laws make it easier for religious institutions and nonprofit colleges to build affordable housing and for developers to build denser, taller buildings if they set aside units for middle-income earners. There are new laws to expand health care rights. Undocumented immigrants of all ages are now eligible to apply for Medi-Cal. Health insurance plans must cover birth control products for women without copays at in-network pharmacies. Out-of-pocket costs of vasectomies are also banned for men with private insurance. Nursing homes that evict a resident must provide documentation of the reasons for the eviction. In education, another new law streamlines the process for undocumented college students to apply for state financial aid. Other bills provide criminal justice reforms. Penalties for sex trafficking of a minor have increased by classifying the crime as a serious penalty. Dealers selling more than a kilogram of fentanyl will have 3 years added to their sentence in an effort to address the soaring death rate from fentanyl. Another new law establishes ebony alerts for missing black youths and women ages 12 to 25. 5 cities will be testing cameras to catch speeders, with fines starting at $50. In addition, statewide bans on lowriders and cruising have been lifted. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, your network for social justice. This is John Tidwell.
Good news on the college affordability front. A program called the California College Corps is helping more than 3,000 students serve their communities while earning around $22 an hour in part-time jobs. The program started in September 2022, and participants logged more than 1 million service hours in the first year alone. California Chief Service Officer Josh Friday explains that students who commit to 450 hours of service per year receive up to $10,000 toward their education.
And they're doing really meaningful work in the community, everything from tutoring and mentoring to working at food banks to taking climate action and building skills and social networks and social capital along the way.
The program is now halfway through the second year and is funded at just over $73 million per year through 2026. It is designed to help low-income students avoid racking up huge debt. There is no age limit, so older non-traditional students are encouraged to apply. People can get more information through their school or at cacollegecorps.com. Friday says the program is a win-win-win because it benefits more than just the students and the community.
It's a win for the entire state, where we're preparing an entire new generation of Californians to be inspired to go into public service, but also tackling some of our biggest challenges.
California was the first state to launch a College Corps. Then several Midwest states banded together to offer a similar option. And last week, the governor of New York announced the creation of the Empire State Service Corps. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Miriam Raftery with a People Power report. Pine Valley Postmaster Jesse Rose Hoffman and a customer heroically teamed up to rescue a pair of runaway horses, prompting gratitude from the horses' owners and members of the community. Hoffman and a customer noticed the two riderless horses galloping across the post office parking lot in mid-January. Just a few minutes earlier, the postmaster had seen a woman and a young girl riding those same horses in a meadow near the post office. Hoffman says, "My first thought was, oh no, where are the riders?" Followed quickly by, "I need to go help." Hoffman and her customer ran out of the office after the horses, catching up to them at a Frosty Burger down the road. They walked the horses back to the post office, just in time to see the horses' grateful riders walking out of the meadow without any serious injuries, although they were in some pain after being thrown by their horses. They explained that the horses had been spooked by a remote-control car. Watching their horses gallop away, the riders feared that the animals could run onto the nearby freeway on-ramp, where they could be injured or worse. Hoffman and her customer offered to ride the horses back to the still-shaken owner's homes just a few blocks away. As they rode away from the post office parking lot, some customers shouted, "Look, the postmaster is bringing back the Pony Express!" But this ride delivered community service, not mail. Hoffman concludes, "When we ran out of the office, we had no idea where the horses were or how this incident would end. I'm glad that we were able to catch up with the horses and that their riders turned out okay." Although it's not part of her postal duties, Hoffman says her actions reflect her commitment to her customers and to the entire Pine Valley community.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
Next up from County News Service, we're going to be hearing from Larry Johnson out at the old Campo Stone Store, one of East County's most unique and colorful historical landmarks.
If you're ever on Highway 94, about an hour east of San Diego, you might see this unique building.
Welcome to Historic Campo and the Gaskell Brothers Stone Store Museum.
The Gaskell Brothers built a fortress-like stone store in 1885. Previously, it was a wooden structure, the site of a famous shootout.
A group of bandits had been raiding down the coast of California. So gunfire started, and there was a big shootout. The guy that they had shot on the floor, one of the Gospel Brothers, didn't kill him. He jumped up, grabbed a shotgun, went out and shot people. And so they were shooting dead blank range around, and both Gospel Brothers were wounded. The locals were afraid of another raid. They couldn't get the military up here to guard and protect them. So they thought they needed a substantial building. So that's why they decided to build a building as thick as this and as strong as this. If you take a look around, if you come in, you'll see that the walls down here are about 4 foot thick. It's from stone that was quarried here on site by hand with hammer and drill and no backhoes or heavy lifting objects. It was manpower. It served as a store from 1885 until about 1927.
No longer a store, this building is now a museum, thanks to County Parks and the Mountain Empire Historical Society. Today, the store reflects the early life of the town of Campo.
When the Historical Society began, they tried to make it look a lot like it did in 1899, or when it was a store functioning to serve the local public. So they have gathered some of the food stuff, the tobaccos, the medical supplies, the ropes, the cans, anything that the ranchers needed. If they didn't have it, you didn't need it.
The building is filled with photos, books, artifacts from the Kumeyaay Indians who occupied the region prior to the settlers, and other rare items.
These shackles were found locally about 3 miles from here on a ranch in about 1885. A person who's bought the ranch found in the well the skeleton. On the skeleton, on the legs, were these shackles. They didn't know who the body was or who the skeleton was. It's still a mystery today. One of the interesting things about these shackles is they're blacksmith made. There's no lock to them. Once they were on, they were meant to stay.
Upstairs is an impressive exhibit dedicated to Campo's military history, including Camp Lockett.
Camp Lockett was started before the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. I guess the military was anticipating that there was going to be a war, and they needed another base here, and they needed a base in this area because of the railroad, which was a key supply line. We had a long exposed border, and one of the things they were afraid of was that if the Japanese came into the war, they might invade Mexico and come into San Diego. So this was sort of a critical point, and so they started building Camp Lockett.
The 10th Cavalry is one you may have heard of.
The famed Buffalo Soldiers, white officers and then African-American enlisted troops. And they were stationed here, and they were guarding tunnels and railroad and the border. Very tough, very good soldiers.
The museum is open on weekends, making for a nice day trip to learn about our local pioneers.
They were entrepreneurs, every one of them. They were constantly trying to figure out how to make the best of what they had and where they were, and to make a living and to leave history and substantial items behind them so that descendants would have something to live and work on and hopefully try and take care of.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Dusty Summer Road, Turco, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.